Good Friday afternoon. And you know what happens here in the studio from 4:30, basically from 4, every Friday here on Eagle FM, your number one talk radio station. Every Friday we have, Witani Childline, Childline radio program here. And we, you know, we just, keep bringing you, just a pair of guests. Just a pair of guests, and today is not exception, because today in the studio we have Itula Helena and Munundumbo Mikhail joining me in the studio to give us a taste, or more like an awesome, informative content of what they brought us today with regards to cyber security awareness. And if the language sounds like it's complicated, don't worry, they are here to do, to break it down in a way that to break it down for you. Actually, they're here to break it down for all of us. Cybersecurity awareness is on the menu today with Witani Childline radio program. In the studio with me is Munundumbo Mikhail and Itula Helena. So, Helena, Mikhail, how are you guys?
We are doing good. How are you?
All good. I think we are all familiar with the studio and each other at this point.
Yeah, we are.
And we are all familiar with Eagle FM and our viewers and listeners.
Yeah, we are all. But we just do not know who is listening to us. So.
No, that's the beauty of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you will find out when you're just, walking around going about your day, and someone shouts, "Oh, Mikhail,
is that you?"
I'm gonna say,
"Yeah."
Yeah. So, I won't waste, I won't take much of your time, ladies. You can take it over from there.
Okay.
So, just trying to, let's see if we can position the cameras in a way that everyone is in the frame. There we go. Now your two cybersecurity experts for the day are all in the frame. So, ladies, please take it away.
Yes. Good afternoon, everyone. Today we are joined with Helena and Helmut by our side at Eagle FM. And today we are talking about cybersecurity. Welcome to another exciting episode of Witani Childline Radio in collaboration with Eagle FM. My name is Mikhaela Munundumbo, and my colleague here is Helena. And I'm so happy to have you guys joining us today. Whoever will welcome, sit and listen to Witani Childline Radio.
A very warm welcome to everyone listening. Whether you are listening at home, at school, wherever you are, we are happy to have you as our audience.
And today, we are talking about everything and something that everyone talks about, or something that is really common to the community, and it's an important topic, which is cybersecurity.
Now, you might be wondering, what exactly does cybersecurity have to do with it? Mikhaela, can you please tell these people what cybersecurity is?
Well, if you use a phone, a computer, a tablet, and a social media, online games, email, or the internet in any way, cybersecurity is important for you.
And our program today will focus on two sessions. Number one,
what is cybersecurity?
And session two is creating strong passwords and protecting accounts, like your social media password, phone passwords.
Yeah, the Instagram accounts. Mm-hmm. Well, we'll be explaining these topics in a simpler way, which will give you examples and ask you some questions along the way.
So wherever you are, stay with us, because you might learn something that you can help protect yourself online. Stay tuned. Don't turn off the radio. We are coming back soon.
Oh, yeah, we'll have a jingle from Eagle FM. Amut.
Yebo.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than The Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kudete okoye ekukurile oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshiwana onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano akupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evito da njuka oku kwetira oipindi konu konda do inawa. Nune uto, otu kwetira o special angeta shake ngejepa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa, nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Nyinge pata fanona, Monica ko Eagle FM, onora etatu imwe bali heali, nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile konderewa, nora etatu natu, bali o etatu batatu, omafilane Eagle FM, the eye.
And welcome back from that extended break. We continue from where actually Michaela and Helena will continue from where they left off. Ladies, the floor is yours.
Yes, Helena, what do you have first?
Session one is what is cyberbullying?
Mm-hmm.
What does cybersecurity mean? So, Michaela, let's start with a big question. What is cybersecurity? Can you tell the people?
So, you guys are going to learn very big things today. Cybersecurity is about protecting our devices, accounts, personal information, and online activities from digital threats.
In simple words, it means learning how to stay safe when you're using technology and internet.
Exactly. Think about your home. You probably have doors and windows, and you might lock them when you leave.
But why? Michaela, why do you do that? Why do you think people do that?
Because you want to protect your belongings and keep unwanted people from entering.
Well, our digital accounts are similar. They also need protection.
Our phones and computers as well can contain things that are very personal to us. Photos, messages, school information, accounts, and other private information.
That is why cybersecurity matters. Everyday examples, Michaela.
Let's think about a normal day. You wake up and check your phone. You open your WhatsApp. You watch a video. You check social media. You search for something on the internet. Maybe you play an online game.
Every time you do these things, you are interacting with technology and sharing or receiving information on your phone
That's
or your device.
That's why we need to develop a good digital safety habit.
Cybersecurity isn't about being afraid of the internet.
Exactly. The internet can be an amazing place to learn, communicate, and create and have fun.
The goal is to use safely and responsibly. So
we are going to head into our questions for the day. Okay, listeners, here's a quick question for you. If you have a valuable item at home, would you leave it outside with no protection?
Probably not.
So why should we leave our important online information unprotected?
That is the idea behind cybersecurity. Like, that is what we are trying to bring at the table today.
How can we protect ourselves? There are several simple things we can do to improve our online safety.
Number one, use strong passwords. Passwords that don't include your birthday. Because everyone, your friends know your birthday. They can guess that it's guessable. You know, someone can get it so easily. And your name, probably your name, you cannot put your name as your password. Because someone can still guess that password and your account is still not safe.
And it's really true. Because you guys are learning from us, and us, we also learned from people that taught us. Because last year, December, we had a training on this, and we really learned from our Lifeline Childline at the head office. And it was very awesome because it was my first day even to learn that I should really have a strong password. So, number two, keep your accounts private and secure.
Number three, be careful about what the personal information you share. You see, you cannot be sharing your location online every single time you are. Live location. It's not needed. Or probably your mood swings. Today you're not in the mood. You're posting, you're not in the mood. And then tomorrow again, you're not in the mood. You're telling everyone on social media. Then they will say, no, this girl is always not in the mood. I must get her attention by giving her attention. And then people will come closer, you know.
You should think before you click or share something online. Helena?
We'll talk about strong passwords in our next session. So we just give you a breath of it. So we're coming.
Yeah, we're coming, guys, with big information. Just wait.
Big information, huh? Right, so have a little bit of mystery to your life is what I heard you guys. Mm-hmm. All right. On the other side of the break, we'll continue with that, with cybersecurity awareness.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
The Villager, wherever you are, we are 20 minutes into the hour of four and you're still listening to Witani Childline radio program here on Eagle FM, in collaboration with the Childline Lifeline. And today's subject is cybersecurity awareness. And in the studio with me sharing more information on that particular subject, Mikael and Helena. So just before we went for the break, we were all informed, more like educated on how we should watch out for our live locations and, you know, the mood for the day. Have a little bit of mystery. Not everything must be, you know, shared with Uncle Google and ChatGPT. But anyway, I'll just, you know, I'll pass the ball to the experts in the room. That is Mikael and Helena. Please continue.
As you guys heard, Uncle Google and ChatGPT. It's time for a quick myth or fact.
We'll say a statement and you decide whether it's a myth or a fact.
Statement number one. Cybersecurity is only important for adults.
Mikaela, that's a myth.
Yeah. Cybersecurity. Myth number two. Cybersecurity is important for everyone who uses digital technology.
Mikaela, that's a fact.
Yeah, that's a fact. And Elena? Statement number two.
Number three.
Number three.
You can trust everything you see on internet.
That's a myth, Helena. That's a myth.
Yeah, it's important to think carefully about information you find online. Not everything is true. In fact, nothing on social media is true. Especially social media. Everything is a lie. There's nothing true. Actually, nowadays, teenagers, they are lying.
Okay. It's just that we are learning now and you guys should also learn from us because we also learned. We are really experts.
I'm not lying, huh?
We are really telling the truth. Because not everywhere and not everything that you see online is safe and trustworthy. So you should keep yourself safe and healthier on Instagram, Facebook.
And do not share your location. And, live location.
Also ChatGPT.
It's not needed.
Yeah. And now we are moving into our session two. Our topic, Helena.
Session 2, strong passwords and protecting accounts.
Passwords.
Yeah. Our topic is something every person with an online account should know about. Both passwords.
Yeah. What is a password? A password is a secret piece of information that helps protect your account.
Think of it like a key. Like, you see, one key opens one door. So your password must only open your account. No one must guess it.
Yeah, as we said before, when we were talking about you locking your things inside in order for the thief not to steal inside. So your house has a key in order for the
thief not to access your account should also have a key.
So your house helps, your house key helps you to protect your home.
Your password helps you to protect your online account.
So you wouldn't normally give your house key to a stranger.
And why would you give or share your password to a stranger either if you're not also giving your key to any stranger?
Yeah, it's true. So we are going to talk about weak passwords. Some passwords are very easy to guess.
For example, using your name, as I said earlier, birthday, school name, or a very simple sequence of numbers can make an account easier to guess. Yeah. Even your cell phone number, don't still guess. Someone can still, maybe it's the number. Then they'll put it's correct. Then you lost everything.
Another problem is using the same password for every account.
Yeah, imagine having one key that opens your house, your school locker, and every other place you use. If you lose the key, then you lost everything.
It's true. And if you forget the key, you lost everything. And if you forget the password, you lost everything.
What makes a password stronger? What do you guys think makes a password stronger, Michaela?
So what should we look for when creating a strong password?
A strong password should be difficult for other people to guess.
Avoid information that someone could easily know about you.
And do not use obvious passwords such as 123454. Just the word password itself. Someone will use the word password just for their password.
Yeah, if a service provides a password manager or other security features, those can also help you manage your account security.
Keep passwords private. Here is one of the most important messages of today's program.
Keep your passwords private. Don't post them online.
Don't send them to people through messages.
And don't share them simply because someone says, I need your password.
You see, nowadays people will share their Instagram passwords and then they'll have accounts, managing each other's accounts.
And
you must keep it safe. You must
Keep it private. Even if it's your next partner, please don't share your password. And don't
if it's your best friend, you don't trust anyone nowadays. Don't share your passwords.
And if you are unsure.
But I can have my mother's bank password, you know. I can have it.
And if you're unsure about what to do with an account or password, speak to a trusted adult. Lifeline Childline 106-116. I'm joking.
You can even call us. We are one of them now.
Yeah. Have you heard of two-factor authentication, also called 2AFA?
It adds another layer of security to their account.
Instead of relying only on a password, an account may ask for another verification step.
For example, it might ask you to confirm your identity using another method.
So when 2FA is available, using it can make an account more secure.
Yeah, same as used 2FA.
Yeah, sometimes the phone also asks you like your identity, the face identity. And the fingerprint as well. Mm-hmm. So the 2FA is also available. Using it can make your account more secure, as you said. So we are going to move ahead into our password challenge. And Helena is going to start first.
Okay, listeners, it's time for our password challenge. Can you start, Miguela?
We are going to give you three examples. Think about which one sounds more secure.
Password A, 123456.
Password B, password, really, the word password itself.
Password C, a long, unique password that isn't based on easily guessed personal information.
That's supposed. If you chose C, well done.
Yeah. The lesson here isn't just about making a password complicated.
It's about making it hard for other people to guess and keeping it private.
You must not do something hard that you're going to forget in 2 days.
Yeah.
Make it reasonable that you won't forget.
Even in a year or a decade, because you're going to use the password. But don't use the same password for every account, as we say. Yeah. Our final recap. Let's quickly recap what we have learned today.
Number one, cybersecurity means protecting ourselves and our information when using technology.
Number two, our personal information is valuable and should be protected.
Number three, use strong passwords, unique passwords for your accounts. Unique passwords for your accounts.
Number four, keep your passwords private.
And number five, use extra security features such as two-factor authentications when available.
And as we are wrapping up, what is it? Big drums from Eagle FM, a jingle.
But you're still going to be...
We are thinking of our sponsors, the closing. So we are going to wrap up with a jingle. We are going to have a jingle and then we wrap up thanking our sponsors.
Right. 1, 2, 3, 4. Turns out, not password. And also password, not password. And that reminded me of, of Spider-Man Far From Home. When Peter Parker meets Hogan in London during the mysterious, the mysterious guy attack. And Peter Parker needed a password to access a computer on the jet that Hogan was flying into. So he turns to Hogan and asks, well, what's your password? And he goes, a password. And Peter Parker goes, so hang on a second, you are the head of security, but your password is password? So, well, I think the moral of the story from both Witani Childline radio program and Michaela and Helena and Eagle FM is that the word password itself shouldn't be your password, let alone 1, 2, 3, 4. And we'll continue on the other side as you heard the ladies wrapping up and sending a shout out and thank you to the sponsors and yours truly, moi, on the other side of the break. Stay tuned.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva Tero ulikoni maondu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukurile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa ninge fata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ila kongerewa nora etatu natu bali o etatu matatu omafelane Eagle FM the eye.
Welcome back. So we continue, you know, with the cybersecurity awareness. And if you just tuned in, this is, you are listening to Eagle FM, and this is Witani Childline radio program in collaboration with the Childline Lifeline here on Eagle FM. And today's subject is cybersecurity awareness. And we've been through how to, you know, strong passwords and which passwords to use and which ones not to use. And now I'll just hand it over to the experts in the room to wrap up the program. Ladies.
Thanks guys for listening, and today we are going to wrap up our program, and just like that we have reached the end of today's cybersecurity program.
We hope you have learned something useful today and that you will put these safety tips into practice.
Before we say goodbye, we want to give a very special thank you to our sponsors and partners for supporting the Witani Childline radio program.
A huge thank you to UNICEF, Lifeline Childline Namibia, and the European Union for your continued support.
Your support helps us share important information and create awareness among children and young people. Just like we learned today, cybersecurity, keep your cybersecurity awareness, raising awareness to people all around in the country, the world, or the people that are listening to Eagle FM to keep their password safe and to live safer online.
And to the audience, thank you everyone for listening to us today.
And I'm Michaela.
And I'm Helena.
Stay smart, stay safe, and stay cyber secure. Until next time, take care.
Goodbye, everyone. Thank you.
Bye.
Stay cyber secure. My high school English teacher liked to say that when you are on the internet, don't be a yes machine. Say no more than you say yes. And we're going to take a break. And again, ladies, thank you very much for that wonderful informative information on cybersecurity.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I'll make sure to change my password after this.
Yeah, please do.
Okay, we are learning all.
Yeah.
Good day.
Because until before you showed up, it was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Look, it's easy to remember. Leave me alone.
Nothing right. To touch,
all right, because on the other side of the break, yeah. Next week, maybe different club, different topic, but still Witani Childline, Lifeline, and still Witani radio program here on Eagle FM with yours truly, moi.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't Don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva Tero ulikoni maondu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukurile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwala onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi tayo loka opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa ninge fata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile konderewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have the capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
And welcome back. Now it's home run time. And when I tell you today is going to be lit, my dear Lord, believe me when I say today is going to be lit, because there's some serious criticism coming from a continental wide civil society organization that has a lot of emphasis, not just on the African continent. They have three of my favorite emphases. One, they are continental wide. Two, they are very good at cooking multinational corporations, so more like a private investment taking place on the African continent, especially in the sphere of agriculture. That's the second one. The third one is they are advocates of, you know what, one, we can do this here at home. All you just have to do is use our brains, which we don't use more often every time that, money in foreign currency shows up, especially coming from outside the African continent. Now, look, today's topic is especially selected to go along with the theme of the day, Friday.
Debunking that guy.
Oh, no, absolutely.
No, it's not.
Look, all I'm saying, Dwight, is I'm going to have a good time thanks to AFSA.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I am going to have a good time.
Yes. But no, it's not. No, it's not. But isn't all the
choices
not because it's Friday?
I know. We didn't choose it because it's Friday. But
it goes with Friday.
The vibe is very Friday-ish.
Yes.
Yeah. We have audios of three individuals that are going to basically shed more light on today's subject, which is they're basically looking at Agra, and Agra and practicing democracy.
It's not Namibia's Agra, please.
Thank you very much.
Let's emphasize that.
Before someone says
we're not here seeking out intentional litigation or court cases against us.
Yeah.
Agra, the Agra that these scientists are talking about. So, can I give the background I stumbled upon this?
This Agra is for Alliance for Green Revolution in Africa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Alliance, because there's a lot of alliances here.
There's a lot of alliance.
For Green
Revolution.
Africa, yeah. That is its name. And
why is that? Why is that everyone had an industrial revolution and we got to have a green one?
I will keep it hanging there, Hamid. Because remember back.
Yeah.
To our foreign relations discussion we had last year and the one in 2024,
mm-hmm.
where after the Italy-Africa summit, where I kept telling you, Helmut, if you go into the EU context and you look at every European country, the major European countries, from Spain to Portugal to France to Germany to Italy, and you ask them, what are their international relations perspective mm-hmm. or policy for Africa? And then
they have one.
Spain for Africa, Portugal for Africa, France for Africa. It's individual countries for Africa.
Yeah.
Do you see the ridiculousness? We are lumped together. Alles for Africa. No wonder we just stay laughing stocks, because even in this discussion, which forms part of today, but I will still, you can still do your intro, Helmut. Even for today, dear listeners, you guys will see technically what this perspective is about, because Mr. Raj Patel, the one scientist and the lecturer, he explains it basically.
Actually, let's start, let's start with...
But we are also explaining most, yeah.
The part that I was going to include in my intro is already covered. Was already covered by hang on a second. Let me just make sure I have the full name. Yeah, Raj Patel, who is a research professor at the University of Texas.
Mm.
Yeah, he's basically the first voice that you're gonna listen to, where he introduces the topic in a very easy to digest way.
Mm.
That basically the entire subject, and this is a 2 hour engagement, two hours plus engagement.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's pointing out that this 2 hours long engagement is going to be based on primarily agricultural practice on the African continent that has been conducted in collaboration with non-African entities, and this is not a non-African entity is inherently in a bad way. It's just that this discussion, they were looking at one thing. When was Agra established back in 2006? And how was the establishment? How was the idea sold from the beginning?
Mm.
And how much of the ideas that were presented in the beginning has been accomplished? In terms of halving hunger problems or food insecurity problems on the African continent and boosting agricultural produce, has this been observed? We are nearly 10 years after the initiative's establishment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
From 2006
to 2016,
I think.
Jeez.
Because Patel explains the legacy of that impact, basically. Yeah. So 2026 is obviously the 20 years after the first 10, the 10 years after the first 10 years. They said they were still measuring some of the continuing impacts of the kinds of crops that were used. Mm-hmm. So dear listeners, if you guys, if you saw our poster. Poster for today on our socials, it explains, yes, we were being poetic. I mean, that's what I sometimes try to do, you know. We don't like just like rice. We also eat pasta and other things in between, you know. So okay. The diet has to be varied, you know. Although I'm now a staunch anti-maize meal person, but still, because I only go for nutritional value and what can give me energy.
Yeah.
We explained there that it's a tale of two realities, basically. But yeah. Before that, we've got an ad break.
Ευαρόγια σου πρέκα, όλοι πάντατο, γη καρέκερουα, ρίνα, όντατο δίρυπε διρέρα. Μόνα, έκυρο γραμματήρι, ναι, το real good IQF chicken mix portions. Ποκέ δωράσικε, έθερε νόμιρον γουνγουή να ναι, ναι σέντα, όμιρον γουνγουή νουνγουή, ο μάγκα, έριτερα δίρυμπαρι, the right brand sunflower seed oil. Τα δημονικά, ο κέντρα, όμιρον γαμάνο νουνγουή, ναι σέντα, όμιρον γουνγουή νουνγουή, έντα το δικά, ο δίνον κουσίσι γουμασί που γάμανο γα Σεπτέμβα, ο βουρα, ο ελτούντζι, λάντα νο κουπίτα, ο σιντζι, μόντο το, ιο παμπατά ευαρόγια σου πρέκα. Ισεουέ, ο το βουροκού χωρόρα, ο καπακέτε, ου καρούν πιτό, ιο κουσί Dan awak si pambu, si mariwa ibu di sepeda ta, yo miriona, oso u kereta awak magano gak siapa ada. Randa ita tu, yo miran desa mata ibu tak ombinga, cuma u WhatsApp ayo nomora, iri kok kambat tiap koe, kok marandero, deto horora oka pakete, utare, ngereng koe, ongoe, om sindani, om nerago, oko siapa ada, aku ke.
And welcome back. So, where were we? Yeah.
So, our poster describes basically what also this webinar highlighted, meaning there's a tale of two realities. The realities are what philanthropy wants to change and to achieve in Africa. So who is the philanthropy? Well, here's an interesting thing, guys. Usually you see the philanthropy manifest in some aspects of civil society or NGOs for that matter.
Yeah.
You will hear from Mr. Patel. His introduction establishes that setting specifically. When you look at, earlier today, even I came from a NIPDB engagement which was based upon a tax law guide, investment guide.
Yeah.
And what is the important thing, Helmut, is that foreign investors, and this is what our government, what we as Namibians also expect as the everyday Namibian, we expect, that if a foreign investor comes to us, they come in good faith. And when they come in good faith, they actually come to not just extract their value, because they're going to put their money up front for said particular investment, but to also contribute value to the everyday Namibian, to the everyday overall Namibian economy. And the ambition, obviously, of a central government's expectations is that every investor comes in good faith and comes with the capability of assisting in driving prosperity, not solely or uniquely the responsibility of that investor to achieve the prosperity of the government. The government has their relationship, has their responsibility. They know it. But how is this prosperity achieved in this dual, this two-pronged approach by public sector and private sector to achieve the prosperity together? I'm now looking like a lecturer here on the video, on the stream. But that's the situation. Now, Patel puts it very poetically, and you're here right now. Patel explains that the discussion, when African governments look at investors, some of these investors show up as NGOs or as civil society organizations. And since this is an Africa approach, because this engagement by AFSA, this alliance for, what's its name, toch? Alliance for Food Sovereignty Africa, they established themselves, they formed themselves in opposition to the other alliance that Helmut cited, the Alliance for Green Revolution Africa. And here's the funny thing. This other AGRA, this other alliance, it was chaired by Kofi Annan at the start.
Yeah.
It was
initiated. Yeah, he was the UNSG at the time.
Yeah. It was initiated by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
Yeah.
And there was another foundation as well that Patel mentions. And what this thing did, basically, which led to the report that Helmut and I sit with, is that it influenced agricultural policies on Africa, meaning governmental policies on the continent for those governments. And it did the weirdest thing, and you guys will hear this. We're gonna keep the treat for you to listen from the actual horse's mouth.
Yeah.
Because if we share it, you know, we might convolute the message. But let Mr. Patel and Mr. Milon Belay, and then Timothy Wise, he's the. We'll get to Timothy after that, because we will still interject between Timothy and Patel and Milon's contribution. But here's the setting, just for you guys to know, from what you will hear, is look at it for the first audio that is Patel and Milon. You will hear their engagement is based upon how to look at how this alliance for Green Revolution Africa, basically what were their ambitions? What were their aims?
Yeah.
What were they trying to achieve in Namibia? In Africa. And Wise, a little bit later in the show, because we will talk about what the real scientific outcomes were, which Wise looked at, Timothy Wise. He's another professor also who also contributed in this webinar. What was like the real scientific outcomes, measurements and stuff? And he sat with data for 20 or 30 years, measuring what the yields were from
before the implementation
before and during
Agra in 2006,
yeah,
and then after that,
and during the implementation, and then afterwards, later on, because his last article I think came out last year,
yeah,
the one he cites, it came out last year, so it was at the end of his research. So, on that note, dear listeners, Helmut, it's up to you when you want to start, how you want to start this.
Oh, straight to to Patel and Milon.
Yeah.
Today. My name is Raj Patel, and I am a research professor at the University of Texas at Austin, and the incoming co-chair of the International Panel of Experts on Sustainable Food Systems. So we're here today to mark two decades of AGRA, the initiative formerly known as the Alliance for a Green Revolution in Africa. Now, even if you know or care nothing about Africa, it's a vital exercise to understand, because it reflects a shift in the way that international development aid, finance, and philanthropy work in the 21st century. So, in 2006, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation partnered with the Rockefeller Foundation to commit $150 million to establish the Alliance for a Green Revolution in Africa. It was initially chaired by former United Nations Secretary General Kofi Annan, and AGRA promised amazing things. It promised to double yields and incomes for 30 million smallholder households while halving hunger by 2020. So over the course of 14 years, it would achieve all of that. Now, next month, donors will gather in Kigali for the 20th Africa Food Systems Forum, hosted by AGRA, marking 20 years of this initiative. Now, when markets get things wrong, when firms get things wrong, markets will discipline them. And when governments get things wrong, voters will kick them out. Philanthropy doesn't have any of those pressures. Instead, what we rely on is independent evaluation, open data, published and enforceable performance conditions. And when none of those obtain, then we have to offer a measure of accountability. And that's what we're doing here today. AGRA has been allowed tax privileges and its donors have been allowed the sleep of the virtuous. But in order for them to have the moral high ground, they need to pay rent. And we are here today to extract that rent in the form of accountability. So what I want to do today is introduce an amazing panel, and we're going to have a broad discussion with some original research being presented. And I want to begin with introducing Milon Belay, my friend and comrade. Milon is the general coordinator of the Alliance for Food Sovereignty in Africa, a continental network of networks advocating for agroecology, food sovereignty, and the rights of African communities. He's also a member of the International Panel of Experts on Sustainable Food Systems and a founder of Mekla Ethiopia, an indigenous organization working on agroecology, intergenerational learning, forest conservation, and the livelihoods of local communities. So, Dr. Billet, AFSA released a landmark report today on 20 years of AGRA's influence on the continent. And AFSA doesn't think this is a cause for celebration. What are the main findings in your report, William?
Thank you very much, Raj. Thanks for the introduction. There are basically six findings. The first finding is 20 years of investment did not accelerate yet. The amount of fertilizer that the continent has used has doubled, but this is not translated into increase in productivity. As I'll show later, the increase in productivity is an increase in the area that is planted. That's the second point. So basically all the investment that went into the agrochemicals and improved varieties and whatever didn't work. And also the increase is because the area planted has increased, which has a lot of implication, which takes me to the third point, which is this increase in productivity of a particular kind of crop, mainly in Africa, maize, has narrowed the cropping system. Meaning, there are very, very much traditional, nutritious, resistant, really, really good nutritious crops in Africa. Again, the number of them, and the planting of those crops has decreased. And the productivity, since they didn't get the care that they demanded, then the productivity has not increased either. But AGRA has promised half young hunger in order to decrease poverty and whatever. But as you can see from the recent reports also, Sophie report, hunger has increased. And the story is the same in these certain countries where AGRA is focusing. So that's the fourth finding of this report. Basically, AGRA has not decreased. It has actually increased. Malnutrition has increased. The fifth point is the governments have supported AGRA's vision, basically. There's a lot of subsidies by the African governments. This has a lot of implication because they could have used this money for other kinds of investment in resilience, a kind of agriculture, in farmers manage system or education, or so many things, even for agriculture. But they were forced, they bought this idea, the Green Revolution idea. So they invested their money into the Green Revolution idea. And finally, this model is getting expanded despite the evidence, you know. As we know, there is a comprehensive African development program, the CADAP. And the CADAP is started in 2003, between 2003 and 2014. It was a 10-year, it was no success. 14 up to 25. Another 10 years, no African country has succeeded. Now we have produced a new CADAP, the new 10.
How much share your epiphany?
You know what? If comedy doesn't work, I'm learning a lot from these guys. how to... how to navigate the world of politics and of the world of politics and economics.
Mm.
Look, the report. The report that I wrote last year pointed out something. Something interesting, and they basically break down. Progress and more like the where, you know, the failures to reach the progress or more like the promises made to countries where, you know, where these initiatives were implemented.
Yeah.
And you have Ghana is on that list, Senegal is on that list, Zambia is on next door.
No, Senegal is not there, apparently. Apparently, Senegal was never part of the program. But Senegal was measured in terms of...
Yeah, so Senegal was just measured, but they were not on the list.
Yeah, but they were measured in a sense of saying, okay, let's look at a country who was not exposed to the program.
Yeah.
Versus a class.
And that's when they saw that the progress in a country that was not participating in the initiative, they were doing just fine.
Yeah. They actually, and the summary, before you get into the report, but before we get into that summary even, we'll quickly take a short ad break, guys.
You know that situation where you help your child with their homework and they come back with a zero? That's what's going on here.
You know, there's something about opening a Tafel Lager that brings people together.
Yeah, and once people come together, the voices follow.
Ideas get shared. Laughs get louder.
New perspectives come up where you least expect them.
Because when people use their voice, conversations start.
And those conversations, they can refresh a moment and even shape what happens next.
So, grab a Tafel Lager and start the conversation. Tafel Lager. Now we're talking. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Oh, welcome. 5 o'clock on the dot. So, helping your child with their homework and then they come back from school with a zero in the homework you helped them with. And now you have to explain to yourself and your child why... Okay, just get a tutor at this point.
Why the zero exists?
Yeah, why they exist?
No, but Hamoud, it's if the parent just read the assignment.
Just change it to "that teacher hates you, my son," and then problem solved.
No. No.
I'll make an excellent Just blame the teacher. They're not there to defend them. Parents don't do that.
But
don't
you know that you're already a parent. Why would you advise us?
Don't do that.
No, I won't. And the funny thing is, I've realized now these days as well that the teachers and the parents have WhatsApp groups together. So now your kid gets the embarrassments of your kid already gets flushed
out on social media. Eesh.
Way earlier than, you know, if you are looking for peace and quiet at 5 o'clock, you have to hear about the nonsense that your kid was up to at school. Meaning, right? Yeah, Mr. Link, your daughter, you know, She throws the other kids with food. I'm like, ay, toh. Why?
I just go straight to the aromas. Like, what's this nonsense I'm seeing on the parent-teacher group? Anyway, you were saying?
Yeah, so, but I actually wanted you to share the light bulb moment.
Oh, yeah, the light bulb moment. Yeah, where was I? You know, when I pointed out that, hang on a second, where's the camera?
Yeah, please, stop making me famous.
Yeah. So, the accusationing going on here in this report, basically this is a series of reports coming from civil society organization that's more that puts a lot of emphasis on agricultural initiatives on the African continent, and they seem to have discovered something of agricultural initiatives where we are collaborating with foreign multinationals, like Agra is one of those examples. Again, not the Namibian Agra. This one, I also just realized that the Namibian Agra goes back to the 1980s. This one, the Agra, the African Agra, the one that we are talking about here, it goes back to 2006. So it's basically an infant in comparison to the Namibian one. So, now, the experts that put together this report, together with AFSA, they pointed out that, what if this whole, philanthropy is just a smart way to avoid paying taxes? Because, think of it this way. 2006, Bill and Melinda Gates and the Rockefeller Foundation.
That's the other foundation.
Yeah, the Rockefeller Foundation.
I'm sorry, guys. Super money.
A lot of money.
Those two foundations alone can buy up half of Africa and own it.
Yeah.
Five times over.
Oh, and they did.
And they can still have change. afterwards.
Look, now that these experts decided to come, thanks to these experts for compiling this report.
Mm.
Now I know how they have that much money. Dwight, this is genius. You are the Rockefeller Foundation. Mm. I'm Bill and Melinda Gates.
Mm.
Actually, you become the Bill and Melinda Gates. I'll be the Rockefeller. Anyway, and.
Because realize which one is older, eh? you realize which one has been in existence since the 1930s.
It's not that.
What?
Bill and Melinda Gates.
What, they divorced? Yes, I know.
Yeah. And then, you know, then Melinda took, you know, a whole lot of money from the gate. And before she left the gate, through the gate.
Mm.
And... outside, that's a lot of gates anyway.
Out of the gate and into another gate, which she now owns personally.
Dude, we are alive now. Should really stop doing this. Anyway, so...
similar to Bezos even.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, Bezos. Was
from
also,
the Amazon, was also through dying. The Amazon, past an Amazon, to an Amazon. And then his ex-wife became instantaneously the richest woman in the world.
Yeah, thanks to this, you know... financial initiative called divorce.
Yeah. what did they say? What is that spiritual thing, that meme that people say? No evil shall form against me.
No weapons formed against me shall prosper.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, those weapons prospered for Bill and Bezos.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is, after going through this report, I totally understand how these guys have this much money, because boy, are they smart. Now, my eureka moment that I just had after Dwight here explained a few things to basically break the barriers that were obstructing my view is that one of the suspicion that the experts that compiled this report had was that, philanthropy could just, could be a very smart way to avoid paying taxes. Because if you bring, take for example, if you were to bring, these agricultural multinational corporations that were benefiting from this initiative, mm. whether these are the companies that were supplying the fertilizer or the insecticide or the agricultural equipments and all that. If they were to bring the industry of the take for example the fertilizer here,
yeah,
they will have to participate on the continent's economic activities,
yeah,
and that means building industries, conducting businesses on the continent, and all these things come with one thing, taxes. Mm. You know which investment mechanism that comes with a lot of tax exempt organizations? Through civil society organizations.
Mm.
Because if you can just come on the corner and say, you know what, actually this is not an investment, it's a donation.
Mm.
I'm just giving to this to this civil society organization, so that they can carry on their agricultural activities.
Yeah.
Yeah. That way, you are working. You are literally working with organizations that are tax exempt. So you don't have to worry much about paying taxes in your economic activities in the same way that you would if you were to set up. Industries.
Yeah.
Or if you were to set up, I don't want to say a franchise.
No, franchise is something else, but yeah. Enterprise.
If you have to set up enterprises, because setting up an enterprise means paying tax, but working your way through civil society organization means you working through organizations that are tax exempt.
Yeah.
And therefore, tax becomes the least of your worry. But in a way, in more ways than one, not only are you enjoying a lot of tax-free initiatives,
mm.
but also you have something even more cynical going on here, because when you shift from agricultural initiatives to influencing policies with regards to what type of seeds should be used, and
what kind of crop should be focused on.
What type of crops
because should be focused on. The interesting thing here is, what they did not mention yet, guys, is they had to cross-reference a lot of data. We'll obviously get to Timothy Wise's audio, but they had to do a lot of cross-referencing. And just in the executive summary alone, the chapter under evidence and the chapter under the findings. So they basically had to wait for 20 years. And the comparison is done with relation to AU's agricultural agenda, which is known as the Kampala Declaration. That's AU's agricultural agenda. So what is the agricultural agenda? The AU's agricultural agenda, Helmut, guess from where it starts. 2026 to 2035. And it also start, and it's also done in sort of like to be in line with the Malabo Review, which is also another particular AU document or, you know, multi-nation agreement document. But the aim here is that if you look at the Kampala Declaration, it's about Africa declaring agricultural self-sufficiency, which is similar to like the AFCFTA. If you guys could have seen Helmut's reaction, his facial expression, he was like, "Ay toch, these guys." Look, the evidence has been so severe. I understand, Helmut, why you would react that way, but the evidence has been so compelling that you can only brace for the opposite event.
Yeah.
In many cases, a lot of the African leaders and the institutions, they show up, they speak the hot air, they speak big, and then you go like, okay, I want to feel your optimism. I want to feel
your, where's the implementation?
Your positivity. How is the implementation going to take place?
Yeah.
And when the implementation has to take place, and they start off with like the first modalities, which would be like reviewing nation by nation legislation, you know, to see whether there are like speed humps between nations, what is the level of synergy going to look like, or synchronization between economies. And then they realize South Africa doesn't want to see any Africans. South Africa doesn't want Africans. Namibia is a country that says you adhere to national laws as long as you come in nationally. What? Yeah. Let me explain this once again. Remember, Helmut, remember that other time that we, about 2 months back, in July, when I referenced when we were talking about the, what was happening in South Africa with regarding the March and March and Operation Dudula situation in terms of looking at immigration in Africa. Now, the first particular concern is that obviously there's a lot of people in this world that will immediately call someone like me who asks the question about compliance. What must I comply with first to enjoy freedoms in a certain scenario? People would label someone like me as, you are a buzzkill, you are killing all the fun. You know those labels that we got as teenagers that we gave each other, you know, if someone doesn't want to, if one of us are worried about consequences of doing
what we're about to do.
Oh yeah, of what we're about to commit to. But here's the thing, what it actually shows a lot of people is that you've got forethought. You're thinking ahead. Yeah. If I do this, what will it lead to?
Yeah.
Now, when I remember that when I was sitting that side, you were sitting that side, and I read out that particular discussion in that when we're looking at the immigration issue in South Africa.
Yeah.
In that period. And then HD sent me the text. Remember that I told you where there was apparently a caller saying, a listener that said, yeah, I'm being xenophobic.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember that comment? But let's review. I don't really care about the person's particular name throwing, because usually that's what people do who, they are unhappy with the reality. Helmut, if you know that your parent, your dad or your mom was about to hospitalize you for what you did, let's say you did something severe. And there are many such examples that can just immediately give you PTSD as you're sitting there.
Yeah.
For me as well. Mostly from my mom. In terms of how angry she could get.
No, for me it was the other way around.
Yeah.
My mom is a sweetheart. My dad, on the other hand, Kim Jong-un.
Now, a situation like that, you would always go and think to yourself after, you know, sniffing, sitting there, sobbing in one corner, what did I do wrong for my parent to react like that?
Yeah.
And then you would realize immediately, what was the issue? You did something that,
that instigated that way. Yeah.
And then you reflect as a very young individual, as a child, and you reflect back and you go like, yeah, maybe let's not do this again.
Yeah.
Yeah. You do get the hard headed guys who continuously try to push the buttons of their parents. They do exist, but in reality, some people, like, they come out of that learning phase and they go like, you know what? Maybe I should open up my eyes a little bit more, think a little bit more, and communicate a little bit more express myself through communication a little bit more. So, if a country has laws, and this is why I cannot find issues specifically with the, but before we continue, we're quickly going to take an ad break, guys, and we're going to come back in terms of also defining that compliance issue discussion.
All right.
Pambu, Shimari Wuri Sepetata, Yomiriona, Osho, Ukarata Maganoga Shoprite, Randa Itatu, Yomiran de Samate Kuta Ombinga, Tuma, Owatsapa Nomura, Irko Kambapirape, Comarandero, Detora Okapakete, Utare, Ngengwe, Ongwe, Om Sindani, Om Nerago, Oko Shoprite, Akuke.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
14 million, Helmut. That country is smaller than us. I'm sorry, guys. Yeah. 14.7 million.
That's the population of Burundi?
Jeez. The size of Comas, Burundi.
That, okay, last time I checked, what's the population of Rwanda? It was somewhere around, 11 or 13 million.
In a country the size of Comas.
Yeah.
There's 11 million people living in there.
Holy cow.
Okay, yeah. So, just where we left off before the break. So, under that particular discussion of compliance, right?
Yeah.
And I'm using an immigration example. And from that reaction that came through from our colleague HD in terms of when he shared that a listener called him and said, you know what, Dwight is being xenophobic. I'm not being xenophobic, guys. We have to understand the realities of complying with the law. If for example, in Namibia's context, the Namibian government knows that we are just 3 million. Namibia cannot have an open border policy because imagine the negative developments that would happen if all Africans realized, okay, Namibia is an open border policy, meaning I can just fly here, buy a ticket, fly here, or I can just walk across the rivers and the borders and stuff like that, and then just come in. Firstly, what any particular government looks at is your immigration population must not be more than your local population. Because then it becomes a destabilizing effect. Why am I citing this? Well, go ask Jordan, go ask Syria, go ask Lebanon, go ask, what was the country's name? Egypt. And remember when we did that discussion last year, I found out that there are significant refugee population groups there yeah. around Israel and Palestine, Israel slash Palestine, that territory,
yeah.
in these neighboring countries that I mentioned, a Palestinian refugee group attempted a coup in Jordan in the 80s, if you guys did not know this. A Palestinian refugee group was the reason for the Lebanon civil war, which lasted 20 years. They tried it in Syria with Bashar al-Assad's father, the older Assad senior. They tried it, and then the Egyptians became aware of this nonsense, and the Egyptians were like, whoa, 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 whoa. That's why when 7 October kicked off,
yeah.
the Egyptians were like, close the border. They're not coming across. And when the whole world was shouting at the Egyptians said, but we've got more than 1 million Palestinians in our border. We can't take any more from Gaza.
I mean, if I was Egypt, I would put them on a plane and then take them to the UK. They started the whole Caribbean in the first place.
Yeah, you know most what the UK does. The UK will just pay you off and say, no, please hold on to them.
Just give them to you. Know, just...
And then what happened with South Africa? South Africa got a ghost plane showing up at Owar Tambo,
full
of Palestinians.
That's a one very weird thing, though, because planes don't just show up out of the blue.
No, there's only...
When a plane shows up
out of the blue,
halfway across the planet, out of the blue,
yeah, in your territory,
you have a lot of powerful people behind that logistics.
No, it's only three entities that do this. We know it's only three countries. Mm. Everyone knows this.
I've seen the Abu Ghraib and the whole, you know, rendition programs.
It's only the not the Pakistanis, but it's only the Brits, the Americans, and the Israelis.
Yeah,
that send ghost planes. Yes, guys, ghost planes. Just like they are worried about the Russian ghost fleets, the Americans and the British send ghost planes.
That's the only way you'd explain. Anyway, I'll just hop.
It's not an actual ghost.
I'll just hop on a whole, on a whole another tangent there. Now, just because I was about to go full, Jeffrey Epstein.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
What is what is a fool, Jeffrey Epstein?
Look, Jeffrey Epstein literally spent decades smuggling children transcontinental.
Yeah. He was a human trafficker.
Yeah,
he is the reason why Namibia has to be aware of human trafficking and child trafficking. Yeah. It's because of him.
Look, there is no way someone can do that without having all the
people.
Without having powerful people.
Yeah. Or basically having paid off powerful people, or knowing powerful people.
You can barely, get out or in and out of the country with food products that are not allowed to get in the country.
Mm.
And the homeboy was just flying around with human cargo, literally, in the 21st century.
Or someone else's children.
Exactly.
Man.
So, the sick part is, even when the fires came out, a large number of the people that are implicated are the ones that are basically supposed to be regular. You have people that are, it's the same thing that happened with the dialogue discussion. That's where we found out that the people that are supposed to be regulating AI are sitting across the table with with the companies that are running the AI and talking about how to survive World War III. Like, that's just one...
Who is planning on starting World War III? So it's just you guys sitting here.
Yeah, so it's just a bunch of you guys. So that's just the scary part, I think, about having a lot of money. You tend to get drunk on the power that comes with it. And you just start doing some weird diabolical stuff. Anyway, so back to the discussion of Agra.
Mm.
I'm gonna walk you through some a few things that's pointed out in the 2020. That's just about 14 pages. Hang on a second. Yeah. Wait. What's the title of the 2025 or of the 2026 one? The 2026 one is titled 20 Years of Green Revolution in Africa, the evidence says it all. That's, yeah, August.
Yeah, the Green Revolution
has failed. Revolution has failed Africa. The 2025 one was titled Challenging the Green Revolution, Exposing Agra's Undue Influence on Africa's agricultural policies. Now, for this one, they did give example of different countries.
Mm.
Yeah. They did give an example of different countries and then went straight up to the African Union. But they did, they really did, put a little bit of extra emphasis on Kenya, because I think that's where the headquarters is.
Mm.
Yeah. Now, just a short background here. AFSA commissioned an investigative study to examine the extent of AGRA's policy influence and uncover instances where it has crossed ethical boundaries, particularly in areas where its actions could be considered undemocratic or coercive. Now, at this point, you are going, it's an agricultural initiative. Where does agriculture meet democracy?
Mm.
Yeah. You think, okay, agricultural initiative, it's like the Food and Agriculture Organization here at the UN.
Yeah.
Now, all of a sudden, taking a lot of interest in civil society, civic education-related subjects.
Mm.
Yeah, like in policy making and stuff. Now, participating is one thing, but lobbying for the change of is a whole different ballgame. Yeah, so, and now, to sort of like try to understand this that undue influence that AFSA had a sneaky suspicion that AGRA was busy conducting. They looked at different countries. Several concerning patterns of AGRA's policy influence have emerged. They started with Ghana, and then the next example, they took a look at Ghana, and then the next one was Kenya and Zambia. Now, on Ghana, AGRA played a role in the Planting for Food and Job or PFJ program, which faced corruption allegation with its subsidy schemes. Although AGRA attributed these issues to government inefficiencies, which, it's a very good argument to make. Yeah. They attributed it to government inefficiencies. Now, its involvement raised accountability concerns.
Yeah.
Phase two of the program, which focused on large-scale commercial farming, reflects AGRA's shift towards industrial agriculture from small scale, which I think was the goal in the beginning. Now, AGRA's collaboration with USAID to draft fertilizer legislations and its work with the Ministry of Agriculture to influence seed reforms had further raised questions about its policy making influence. That is in Ghana.
Mm.
Next, my favorite, Kenya. AGRA influenced the dismantling of a strategic food reserve program. Oh, this was a big deal. I remember reading about this. Now, a vital safety net for national food security, citing corruption and inefficiency. It also promoted bundling agricultural insurance with inputs like fertilizer and hybrid seeds. Favoring private sector actors. Not only do you see this shift from small scale agricultural initiative to commercial agriculture, but you are also going full large scale agricultural private sector
mm.
and policy making.
Mm.
Which is an interesting diversion to take from, we're just here to help the small guys, reach that level. Now, that's in Kenya. Last year, that was last year. There's a local NGO, I believe. Now, their goal is to save seeds, like traditional seeds, you know, seeds that are native to Kenya. You know, just halfway through their preservation initiatives and sharing, because they were sharing seeds, it's made up of a group of small scale farmers.
Yeah.
They were sharing seeds. And, also, I think at the beginning of last year, I think the story takes you back to 2015 or 2012 then. Now, the Kenyan government passed a law, which I think just reached like a low level back last year. And the goal was to establish a seed regulatory authority and make it against the law for farmers to share seeds amongst themselves without going through that body. So this NGO, they're working together with Greenpeace.
Mm.
Yeah, they appealed that case to court, and they won that case last year. And I actually couldn't understand why. And this was last year. I didn't understand why why the government would go against an organization that was preserving its native seeds. And when this popped up, I was like, actually, what if this was one of the contributing factor? Because if you are centralizing is very good, but
but it also shows the influence can be applied
there. Exactly.
Yeah.
If you centralize seed storage, you also centralize. You are basically centralizing the entire country's food infrastructure. And you remember the Mexico US case that we were talking about last year?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's where it
is. And that was based on a GMO versus natural discussion also.
Yeah, and also diversity. The Mexicans wanted to have multiple breeds of seeds.
In their own country.
Yeah, in their own country.
And American maize farming companies were contesting against the local smaller scale Mexican farmers from practicing with different maize variants.
Yeah.
Which were natural products.
Yeah.
Because maize doesn't come from Africa.
Because you signed it from South America.
Yeah. Because maize is a South American thing.
You plant, well, you signed this contract, which is why a lot of people, it's either, you know, they are not reading or, you know, after a couple of $1,000, you know, the handwriting on the contract becomes blurry. And then they just sign.
You said it was enough to make the eyes...
You know what?
Go blurry.
I was going to read it, but now that we have stuck here,
thank you.
I gotta go shopping.
Thank you for stuffing this in my pocket.
Yeah. Now, up next was Zambia. Now, on Zambia, AGRA's involvement in the National Agricultural Investment Plan, NAIP, 2, that was the second phase, now known as the Comprehensive Agricultural Transition Support Program. Abbreviations and themes, boy, are we good at this. Now, prioritized export-oriented supply chain, sidelining smallholder farmers, prioritizing initiatives and agroecology. And agroecology is also found on the description of AFSA.
Mm.
Yeah. And AGRA also facilitated the creation of agricultural transformation offices, ATOs, modeled on Ethiopia's Agricultural Transformation Agency, embedding external consultants with ministries to align policies with its agenda. This I found very fascinating. Like if Zambia's AGRA model was based on the Ethiopian model, then the Natural Resources Standing Committee of the previous administration here in Namibia.
Mm.
We were in Ethiopia to look at how agriculture is practiced and see if there's a thing or two that we can learn from them that we can implement here.
Yeah.
But don't worry, our standing committee reports can be adopted in whole or in part. As we just
or ignored.
Out. Or ignored. The last part I want to point out here is now African Union. Okay, the case of Zambia, the case of, you know, the case of Ghana. That's just one whole. Now on this one, they're just going on, you know, in detail. And the case of, believe it or not, Mali. And you have the case of Kenya and the conclusion now. Now, I'm going to look for the African Union part.
Mm.
Yeah.
So, while we're obviously now in, you know, in the second hour of today's program,
yeah,
an interesting thing pops up. And this is the interesting thing about evidence or proof. So, AFSA cited specifically, because they had to review like 20 years worth of data.
Yeah.
In order for this report that Helmut just now... Okay, I'm starting with the 2026 one,
yeah,
but Helmut also was basically citing from the 2025 one. They basically follow on after each other, so they are relevant to this discussion. But in the 2026 one, in the executive summary, they outline the evidence based upon yields. And it basically also describes the situation you were citing just now, Helmut, about how this alliance basically allowed for the formation of lobbying and interest groups to be created into the agricultural sector.
Yeah.
In essence, for example, they cited here that crops that Africans in that were part of this AGRA program across Africa, crops, the area in terms of where they were growing a certain crop, which was maize, had increased by 71%. And the yields rose by 40%. So obviously if you see, okay, so this means there's a lot more coming across a specific area of this particular crop. And then they looked at cassava. The area also then more than doubled while its yields actually fell. But there's something also coupled with the maize numbers,
yeah,
is that it was also the amount of fertilizer being imported or being used or being adopted or being brought in. Remember, guys, maize is not an African product.
Yeah.
Okay, so is the tomato and so is the potato and so is
a lot of crops that are native. Yeah.
So, and one of the things, because this report, the first two authors, the first two speakers that you guys heard, Milion Bilay and Raj Patel, they are also authors of this report. And then Timothy Wise, who we'll hear a little bit later on, he provided some additional statistics and information and research associated also to this. So here's the other funny thing, Helmut. So they cite here, is that, I think this was, yeah, and this is Bilay's own words, basically. This is his own words. He said here, across Africa, farmers are already building alternatives, restoring soils, conserving and exchanging seeds, integrating crops, trees and livestock, and reducing dependence on costly external inputs. Now, this most of the time sounds everything. When I hear that costly external inputs, I mostly keep thinking about our own green schemes.
External inputs. Is you're exporting or pretty much everything that you're using?
No.
Yeah.
Just to run the green scheme.
Yeah.
Apparently, you know, you would always hear the inputs are an issue for the green scheme to properly run smoothly. They cite here obviously that the evidence shows that diversified agroecological systems can strengthen food security, soil health, and farmer agency while keeping more value within African communities. Now, the whole element, the whole discussion was based upon, and that was Bilay's own contribution forward in the 2026 report, was the evidence that Wise provided. He said, the report draws on institutional reports, qualitative, quantitative analysis, and peer-reviewed research and field evidence, and that the quantitative core, which is what Wise contributed, is based upon Food and Agriculture Organization data across the 13 focus countries over 18 years. So he took
that 18-year scope for these countries that were part of this Agra program. He said, this is read alongside the Kampala Declaration, the AU's 2026 to 2035 strategy, and the final Malabo review, which is that Agra's policy briefs, strategy reports and tax filings, and the donor-commissioned mathematics evaluation, or Mathematica evaluation. He says, none of the institutions that finance the model has undertaken a comprehensive 20-year evaluation, and that Agra has not released its monitoring data for independent assessment. The available evidence is therefore also incomplete, but the convergence of national data, donor evaluation, institutional records, and peer-reviewed research is strong enough to reach a clear verdict. But what is this verdict? What is it, basically? 20 years of investment did not accelerate staple yields. It did not accelerate it.
As promised.
As promised.
Yeah.
Fertilizer use more than doubled. That's point number two. But weighted staple yields only grew by 1.2% a year. A year. Slightly below the 1.3% annual growth achieved in the 12 years before this alliance showed up. Maize yields increased by far less than anticipated, while millet, roots and tubers, and groundnut yields all declined. Now, why does this sound very familiar to what happened with the second Irish famine?
Translation, you're not helping.
You're not helping.
Yeah.
They were creating monoculturalism.
Yeah.
But for who are you growing all this maize? Because do you know what was the next point?
Yeah.
Nourishment. Not undernourishment was growing in the impacted countries, the countries that were part of this program. Undernourishment, under point four of that executive summary, they say, hunger rose and the focus countries gained no measurable advantage. The number of chronically undernourished people across the 13 countries rose by 58%. From 94.6 million to 149.6 million. 149? Almost the same increase that was recorded across sub-Saharan Africa as a whole. Even the countries with comparatively strong yield growth did not necessarily reduce hunger. For example, Malawi recorded the strongest staple yield growth in the group, but its number of undernourished people still rose by 61%. Now, what is undernourished, guys?
You need another plan when you see something like that. Because clearly, the one that you build back in 2006 is not working.
Exactly. Because if you ask the question, what is undernourished? Nah. My goodness, Helmut.
Undernourished means you are eating, but you are starving on a cellular level.
Yeah. Where's this description? I don't like these AI descriptions, Thomas. So the meaning of undernourished is supplied with less than the minimum amount of nutrients or foods essential for sound health and growth. So that means their diet was not right. So this means there was a dietary introduction of something that did not actually contribute any meaningful sustenance in the daily diets in some of these 13 African countries. Now, a lot of people can say, you know, could say, okay, Dwight, maybe even able-bodied professionals and people like you and me, Helmut, who work every day, who have got access to money to buy food every day or daily, would make a claim, yeah, then the kinds of foods that we eat with what we can afford could also be a potential indicator of undernourishment. Yes, true, you know, 100%, because each to their own in terms of what you put in your mouth to get energy from it. But here is the aim that you've got to achieve when you're looking at food. If you're obviously going to eat a lot of something, it's going to lead to some sort of negative reaction. For example, too much sugar. Yes, you could be hyperactive, but it can also accelerate the rate at which your teeth or the enamel of your teeth is eroded a lot quicker. If you eat sweets a lot,
That also, but then a lot of sugar and a lot of sweets, if you've got a sweet tooth basically, could lead to an acceleration of diabetes of some kind. If you don't drink enough water daily, just water, that can lead to some sort of a damage later on if you get older of your kidneys and of your liver. If you drink too much alcohol, for those of you guys that are now, you know, preparing.
Planning on moving to Namib Rory's.
For jovial, you know, activities.
Oh, it's Friday. Oh, thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah. Who are planning and preparing for the...
Time to support local.
For the jovial, you know, engagements later today. Well, if you do this every weekend, you're putting your liver and your kidneys under stress as well. So that technically means it will also reach a certain particular threshold. But the conversation that has always been about Africa has been one of Africa is always hungry. Africa is always poor, using the political term. Africa always needs something. Africa always has to beg. Africa always has to do this. Let's look after Africa as part of a European agenda, an American agenda, so on and so forth. But I have one big conclusion, Helmut, to highlight.
Yeah.
When we did that other discussion of the America First policy, the health policy.
Yeah.
Which was weird because why would you name it America First, but we're coming to African countries seeking their national data? What are you trying to do with our national data? And then the second scenario was also one of how do Americans approach the world? And even from this engagement, right, this review that these guys have done by this Alliance for Food Security Africa, they have proven the theory which I've been sitting with for so long. It seems like the Americans really don't like the rest of Africa. They don't like Africa. I'll be honest with you. It seems like they don't like Africa.
Actually, I wouldn't put it that way. I would put it in a way of, think of it this way.
Mm.
We have got to start coming up with our own initiatives.
Mm.
Because everything that looks, you can call it, philanthropy. It's just giving me all these millions out of the kindness of his heart. No, he's not. Just look at this in the very same way that you look at investors.
Yeah.
They didn't become millionaires by giving away money for free.
Nope.
So if they are giving you money, ask yourself one question. What are they getting out of it? Because more often the goal is to get out more money. Just look at this example that we're sitting with here today.
Mm.
Now, the idea was to invest into boosting mostly small-scale agriculture and, improve yield on the continent and solve, bring about, food security.
Yeah.
And then
all in inverted commas. Yeah.
And then we ended up with a situation like it's described in the report where we're seeing a large number of money now, a large number of fertilizer. Coming into the continent to support those initiatives. Now, who was producing this, who was producing the fertilizer?
Yeah.
They were not being produced here. They were being produced somewhere else. This is one of the biggest criticism of, foreign aid. A large chunk of foreign aid in terms of money doesn't leave the parent continent. Why? It's because, this is the example that I always use. Look, it's a very genius way of laundering money.
Mm.
I like to use Shilongo leather as an example. If we were a developed country and we want to create opportunities for our people out there.
Yeah.
You can't just take your people out there and then make them start applying for jobs in other people's countries. No, you're gonna have to be creative. Now, how do you do that? You take a lot of taxpayers' money and then tell people in DRC, for example, that the Republic of Namibia is donating 10 million Namibian dollars to schools in DRC.
And then they even ask, what is a million dollars? Don't worry, it's South African rents for now.
It's South African rents for now. Yeah. So they are donating a $10 million worth of what? Shoes. You are not taking that $10 million
You're not giving the money.
You are not giving the money.
Yeah.
You are taking that money and then
converting it into a product.
Exactly. You find a company that makes the shoes in Namibia. You give them the money.
Yeah.
And then you take those shoes and then give them to a transport and logistics company that is also Gezwe in Namibia.
Yeah.
To, you know,
who then transports it.
Exactly.
Through, how? Through Zambia.
Yep. So you have a so you have Namibian money that is given to a Namibian shoe manufacturing company, and then the products are given to a Namibian logistics and transport company. Just how much of this $10 million is is reaching DRC?
Zero.
Yeah. Zero. On paper, Namibia gave $10 million to DRC. They didn't. And that's just basically, foreign aid 101. And initiatives like this is pretty much the exact same thing. So now the three foundations named, what do? They pledged millions and millions of dollars. Just how much of that money reached the African continent? Because you can bet much of it went to fertilizer manufacturing companies and insecticide manufacturing companies that are based in their countries.
Yep.
You want to try to find out who are the majority shareholders in these fertilizer manufacturing companies?
Who, Helmut?
Chances are very high. The very same guy that are quote-unquote donating you the money are the majority shareholders in the fertilizer manufacturing companies that you are now buying with. And by the way, African leadership also decided to pitch in with what they do best, subsidize the initiatives. But you can't be that dumb. Look, the thing is...
And all it would have cost you, Ne, is just to Google search, who is this person that wants to come and donate things?
Look, no one gives you millions of dollars for free.
Not that it's actually the money, it's the goods.
No. And no one becomes a millionaire by just giving away money for free.
Hey, Hamut.
If you want to look, if you want to become a millionaire, you're gonna have to join the Stingy Mensa.
There was a 5-year-old who was this close
until you all started calling on Eagle FM. Now the thing is, complain.
And Dwight and Helmut had to explain, guys, there's nothing wrong with it.
Now look, the thing is, I think I'm learning a lot about multinational corporations and the way that they operate, which is it's fascinating how they do all these things.
But a foundation or a CSR organization, isn't it a multinational? Yes, they act like a multinational because they would have the same presence, but they come in bad faith. They don't come in good faith.
Well, they come in, they're coming in good faith. Oh my God, your agriculture sector is not doing, we have millions of dollars to help you, uplift your people from poverty. Right. Now, how are you going to do this? How will uplift?
But your people are not hungry. What poverty? Do you see the dichotomy of the statement or the problematic element of the statement, poverty, Hamut? And this is what these guys say in this report.
Yeah.
The people are not hungry before 16 years ago or 20 years ago. The moment this alliance showed up, Agra Alliance showed up, then undernourishment happened. Monoculturalism kicks in. Decline in a diversified diet becomes a forgotten issue. So they come in bad faith.
Look, if you want development, do it yourself.
Exactly.
This whole thing of, was that January 2024, Italy Africa Summit.
Yeah.
Europe must put its money where it's, must put its money where, back its words with its money.
Yeah.
If they are giving you, look, anyone that will give you your money, anyone that will give you their money, that money will come with strings attached.
Mm.
And this is the point where I don't blame these organizations.
Mm.
I blame the person running the house.
Mm. And you would not be wrong.
Yep. definitely blaming the person running the house. On the finding on the 2025 report, the finding highlights AGRA's growing influence on agricultural policies at local, national, regional, and continental level, often prioritizing corporate-driven approaches over the needs of smallholder farmers. That's the tip of the iceberg. And then that's when they now just reach my favorite, delicious, roping the African Union. Now, at the continental level, AGRA has played a significant role in shaping agricultural policy across Africa by engaging in key African Union initiatives such as climate summits, the African Food System Summit, the African Union Fertilizer and Soil Health Summit, and the post Malabo process. Here's the thing. These are the events we are showing up with suits and then smiling for the pictures afterwards, not realizing that, okay, you know what? The food is free. You can just eat. Have you ever wondered why the food is free? Your policies are changing, you moron. By the time that you wake up, you only have one source of food.
Yeah.
That's being controlled from seeds to insecticide to fertilizer halfway across the planet.
Oh, and did you see the seed that they described? It's technically a GMO. So the fertilizer is an import. The seed is an import.
It's an import. Patented.
Patented and protected.
So you can't reproduce it.
Yeah. And I suspect that's probably also the thing that slightly exists in Namibia.
Yeah.
Farmers may not sell seeds to each other. We had the people in the studio here.
Yeah.
A couple of times already. And it was paid for interviews. So I won't mention any names. You know who they were.
Hang on a second. Oh, yeah.
You know who they were. And the concern is obviously that, that obviously one farmer might, profiteer extensively. Look, it's a compliance measure. That's why I started off our discussion from a compliance perspective.
I mean, the whole policy is discussion being emphasized in this report ties into compliance.
Yeah. But
because if you can change the policy, you're changing the ways of compliance.
Yeah, but it's whose policy? You see, is this policy a policy or legislation that comes through from something organic created by, let's for example say, Namibians for themselves?
Yeah.
Or is it, for example, something dodgy? For example, that policy that came through, remember the one that we looked at last year, the one about mining in protected areas? And potential tourist attraction areas.
Yeah.
I mean, who comes up with such a harebrained idea? Who?
Someone that has definitely...
Someone influenced someone in Ministry of Mines and Energy or Industries Mines and Energy to come up with this harebrained idea. Who wants to mine in a protected area?
You have seen... you have seen The Dictator, right? The movie. Oh, no. Man, yeah, you're missing
out. I've watched Last King of Scotland, the one about Idi Amin and James McAvoy, where James McAvoy is the actual Scottish doctor who Idi Amin is fixated on. It was like a weird relationship. It's like Idi Amin thought that McAvoy's character, the Scottish doctor, this white guy.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys, for labeling like that. I just had to make the emphasis because Forrest Whitaker was playing Idi Amin and McAvoy was playing the Scottish doctor. And it's obviously a portrayal because apparently it was real. This fixation that Idi Amin had with this doctor, the Scotsman back in the '70s, and this guy felt uncomfortable because it's as if Amin wanted to show him, this is who he is, and McAvoy's character, this doctor, has to now witness all these things from political. Bad things to some of the more over-the-top propaganda stuff. And McAvoy's character was just getting like all, completely sort of like nervous about the situation that he was finding himself in.
Yeah.
And it was obviously
something, if you've ever watched a movie about some sort of a dictator, but then I also realized what Hollywood does, literally Hollywood from the US, they would change details in movies. Because the movie Last King of Scotland is based upon a book. It's also based upon a book. Yeah. And it's written from the perspective of this doctor, because it was a real life event.
Yeah.
And they go and change things. And then I realized what Hollywood keeps doing. And then they butcher a book, which is a wonderful product already. And then they butcher the thing. I'm like, Neman Losmar. So now I rather just watch the fiction. So if you're going to give me Harry Potter, I'll watch it for what it is. It's complete fiction. But don't come and give me a movie that says it's based on true events and everything is butchered in the movie from the true events.
They do that a lot. They do that a lot with books.
Yeah. And now they don't use Russians anymore in the movies.
I know, right?
Now the Now if you're a Russian, the Russian speaks English with other Russians.
Yeah.
And the other Russians respond in English. I'm referencing Mission Impossible 4.
Look,
I just stopped the movie entirely because I couldn't take it.
Look, that's just not the funny part about it. The funniest part for me is how you are flying, across galaxies and you find a planet where it says, interesting enough, people that look exactly like you,
And they are not human, but they look human.
They also speak English.
For some reason.
Right. How many galaxies did the British colonize? And now, look, the thing is, as much as if you look at the movie The Dictator, it's a very funny movie where, you have Admiral General Aladdin with a supreme beard.
Mm.
The thing is, his right hand man who betrayed him was communicating with some guys that with some oil investors, and there was a part of Wadia, the fictional country.
Yeah,
yeah. That was very rich in oil, and but the thing is, it was a village. So the oil investors was just trying to tell the right hand guy, the right hand man to the dictator Aladdin, that one thing we saw last time we visited that area basically is that place is the place is overpopulated. How are we gonna reach to the oil? Yeah. The right hand man looked at the oil guy and goes like, then unpopulate it. That's the most scariest part I've ever seen in a comedy movie. What the heck do you mean unpopulated? Now that's just the very diabolical picture of how far a lot of people that like money so much are willing to go to get to whatever resources that they want for them to make money.
Mm.
But the reason why I came straight to the African Union part here is that as much as I wanna blame this, Agra or the philanthropic guys behind it, we have got to start seeing these things coming.
Mm.
It's not rocket science, because through running this initiative, they did create employment.
Mm.
But you are looking at the long-term impact.
But did they create employment?
They did create employment by giving people, just do dig a hole there for this mango tree. And then you dig a hole there and they are creating, you are just looking at a temporary employment here, that's for sure.
Mm.
Yeah, so just, how to put this? Climate change type of initiatives that they were running here pretty much all across the continent.
Yeah.
Now, one notable example is Agra's involvement in organizing and funding the African Union's fertilizer and soil health summit that took place in Nairobi from May the 7th to the 9th, 2024. Mm. The summit aimed to underscore the critical role of fertilizer and soil health in promoting agricultural productivity across the African continent.
Yeah.
You know what that, you know, which report here in Namibia that reminded me of?
Mm.
Office of the Auditor General. Minister of Environment and Minister of Agriculture.
Yeah.
Or you guys will create each other. You guys will create problems for each other.
Yeah.
Now, look. The initiative, you know, the initiative itself, climate change initiatives, excellent idea. Agricultural initiatives, excellent idea.
Mm.
Until you find out that now you are shifting from this type of initiatives to importing large-scale fertilizer. And then you, that's when you realize, okay, hang on a second. I'm just supporting their local here.
Mm.
They keep saying they are, you know, they are investing money here, but this money is not coming. The fertilizer that they are buying from their homies is coming here. So this is a very slick way of, you know, that they are spending money without letting that money leave their country.
Mm. Hey, well, you can ask Ukraine. Ukraine doesn't see that money.
No, oh, yeah. They,
that's the classic
thank
example.
Thank you very much. Ukraine is an excellent example.
They don't see that money.
We have donated $7 billion to Ukraine. No, that money went to Lockheed Martin.
And then everyone finds, okay, so where's the money? No, no, we delivered hardware, bullets. We still have to decide on the car, on the type of plane, and the type of tank.
Who made the tanks?
And then you ask, okay, how much did the bullets cost? Oh, no, they cost $3 billion out of that $7 billion. You're like, what? For bullets?
Well, people shoot a lot.
You know that Shilongo Leather and Silas Ndepuka example, that NDRC example?
Yeah.
That just, that's Ukraine 101.
Yeah, that is Ukraine 101.
Yep.
But before we continue, guys, we're forgetting an audio. We've got to get to the evidence.
One.
So you will listen to Timothy Wise right now. It's about a 10 minutes audio. Timothy Wise is the other professor, the other expert who technically did the statistical analysis, the quantitative analysis, as they referenced in the report. And the interesting thing is, Wise just summarizes basically all his work. But just listen to some of the key things that he's speaking about, because it reinforces what we've been saying, that it seems unfortunately that it was sort of like a channel that was developed to channel genetically modified seeds
fertilizer
into the African continent. And
who is having all the patents to the genetically modified seeds? Not us. Who is manufacturing the fertilizer? Not us. So who is getting the money that's being used to buy both of these products? Not you. I mean, look, it's diabolical, but if you just look at the system, it's genius.
That's why I said they're not good faith actors, Helmut. That's why I said, made that statement.
Yeah.
Everywhere from now on, the only perspective and lens I'm going to have on is whether you show up in good faith. And if you show up and it leads to a negative creating or happening, or the outcome is a negative or a depreciated value from a previous positive state, you're not acting in good faith.
Look, if you say that you are going to donate shoes to Namibia, show up with the money and buy those shoes from a local manufacturer.
But now they ship.
Then we are talking.
But now they ship a whole bunch of size fives for women, and they go donated to a boys' school somewhere.
Yeah.
And all the boys, the average foot size there is size 6 and up.
Yeah.
Now whose toes must now be cracked to fit into that size 5?
Where did you buy the products you are donating?
Yeah.
Hang on a second. I remember shortly after COVID-19, the U.S. donated condoms and lubricants. Last time I checked, we don't manufacture both.
Yes.
Okay, we were just labeling the few that was coming out of Asia, and then we got caught.
From India and China.
Yeah.
You know, that was also asking questions. How do condoms cost $5 billion? But if it has to be on
they must come with their own Viagra. But the whole thing is...
I think it's probably because the ship has to come from there.
So you're looking at the distance.
Transport cost, because if the company was in South Africa, you could have just gone to South Africa.
Yeah. But then, I mean, that's another question. Why didn't we just go to South Africa?
Because they don't go to South Africa. And that's the dumb thing.
Well, that sounds like you just want to inflate the price so you can get paid
exactly.
more.
Exactly.
Oh.
And that is the concern also in terms of Namibia's procurement, because it doesn't matter how many times civil society points this out, or the local media highlights this, or these guys snitch each other out in a court of law, because it's civil litigation. It's the same theme popping up. Why did you overinflate your price?
Because I want to...
How do condoms cost 5 billion? Do you want to stop Vision 2030?
You know, when you think of it like that, you know... Actually, when you make the... When you put it like that to you, it comes out very bleak, because you are basically reminding condoms manufacturers and cigarette manufacturers there. These guys are killing their future customers.
Yes.
It's a terrible business model.
And that's not what they want to hear, definitely. That's not what they want to hear. They just want to know, for how long can you still drink? Or for how long can you still smoke? Or for how long can you still be alive to be there to spend your hard-earned dollar with them?
I still, you know, my favorite story is the Marlboro example, Czech Republic.
Mm.
How they, you know, just sat with the health minister and told them, honorable minister, you know what? If people start smoking now, they will die sooner, so you don't have to worry about pension.
Mm.
It will save you millions of dollars. They will die before they reach retirement.
Mm.
And they presented that as if it was just a brilliant business model.
Yeah.
And then, well, this is why snitches are very important. So they snitched on the minister.
snitches are very. Yeah.
Okay. Audio.
Audio. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Emilion. I really do think it's often forgotten that while hundreds of millions of dollars were given by Gates and Rockefeller, that was matched with an order of magnitude more from local governments following, as you say, the model that was created by AGRA. And to help us understand the impacts of this, I'm very pleased to introduce Tufts University researcher Timothy Wise. Dr. Wise has been following AGRA for years, co-authoring a landmark Rosa Luxemburg report a few years back. His latest assessment shows just how poorly AGRA's 13 focus countries have performed following that Green Revolution model. Dr. Wise, please, take it away.
No, thanks, Raj, and thanks, Million. I really appreciate the opportunity to share this research, which was done very much to recognize the AGRA's 20th year and put it in more context, as Raj says, to create more accountability. I'll share my screen for just a little bit more detail on, to give you a little more detail on what Million just presented. The Green Revolution Has Failed Africa is AFSA's new report. It draws in part on my updated assessment, Requiem for Africa's Green Revolution, which is adding 6 years of data to the 2020 study that I did that showed AGRA was basically failing to meet its goals. And let me just give you a snapshot of what that says to deepen what Million presented. Again, AGRA and CADF both made bold promises, as Raj explained, doubling productivity and reducing hunger by half. That's all based on the idea of sustainable intensification, more food from the same land by increasing the use of commercial seeds, fertilizers, and chemicals. That's the Green Revolution package. So I'm looking at national agricultural data from the UN for AGRA's 13 focus countries. They've been 13 countries on and off for different parts of AGRA's 20 years. And it shows that since 2006, the Green Revolution has produced stagnant yields, eroded crop and diet diversity, declining climate resilience. With that declining diet diversity, and unsustainable land use with rising hunger. And what we add in this year's report is that Senegal's experience as a counterfactual. They cut hunger in half by using a diversity of crops and policies. So here's the basic snapshot of AGRA's 13 countries. Again, goal, upper line, double productivity. Red line below, have undernourishment. It looks like success because production went up by more than double in these 18 years that our data measures. But it's not success because it was supposed to be through yield growth, not through the expanded planting area. So this is extensification, not sustainable intensification. And the problem with that expanded area for maize is that it came at the expense of other crops. Millet, sorghum saw either declining or stagnant yields and area planted. I measure a staple yield index, which is a basket of staple crops and the yield growth, and it's very, very low for agri-countries. And then most tragically, the number of undernourished people in AGRA's 13 countries has gone up 58% in that 18-year period. The failure to yield is really the story. This is what if they were going to double productivity, it would have been 5% a year growth rate. Instead, they got 1.2% for the 18 years we studied. That's lower than the productivity before AGRA came on the scene, before these billions of dollars were lavished on supposedly to increase productivity. And in the most recent 6 years, it's been almost no growth at all in productivity. Just to give you a picture of what the study contains, a report card on this model shows all of the AGRA countries, plus Senegal as a comparison, all the AGRA with slowing yields and rising hunger in AGRA as a group. No country met AGRA's goals. Nigeria, Kenya, and Uganda all saw actually declining yields and hunger that doubled, or in Nigeria's case, more than tripled. And even the best performers did not meet AGRA or CADEP's goals. They had higher yields than some of the other AGRA countries, and hunger went down. But again, compare it to Senegal, where you get hunger declining by 50%. Senegal did that, like Raj said, and by a diversity of policies and a diversity of outcomes. Look at the range of crops, comparing the blue bar of AGRA countries with the red bar of Senegal. Much more dramatic increases in yields in millet, sorghum, cassava and roots and tubers, groundnuts, all staple crops in which AGRA saw stagnant or declining yields. Only in maize did AGRA top Senegal for yields. And finally, let me conclude by giving a little bit better picture on this, what Million referred to as the displacement of traditional African crops by maize. Again, you saw, I showed this 139% increase in maize production, 40% yield growth. Millet, 27% decline in production and a 17% decline in yields. And with all that money being poured into maize through AGRA and through Green Revolution programs did, is it took land use. And all the land went into maize with it nearly doubling the amount of area planted to maize while the area planted to millet declined. Zambia, which we'll hear a little bit more about, is a really good example that I'll close with, because it's the country that had the highest level of fertilizer use, and the greatest apparent success in increasing maize production. Again, production, not yield. The yield growth was tiny, despite all that fertilizer being poured on Zambia's maize fields. And look what happened to the traditional crops. Millet down in area, sorghum down in planted area. A very low staple yield index. And the number of hungry went up 33%. And we see this in a lot of countries. Huge increases in maize production and increases in hunger, not decreases in hunger. The maize is not feeding the hungry. These are the links to the two reports, AFSA's report and my paper, and those will be made available in the chat, I think.
Welcome back. So we continue where we left off. But if you listen to the audio, there's one thing that was pointed out, in the audio by Dr. Weiss, which is more like something is not matching. If you look at it, the idea that was sold. And the productivity, or more like the sluggishness and the decline in productivity that's coming out of that initiative. The two are not getting hand in hand. On page 13 of the 2026 report, you find annual growth, figure one, the first table, because there are two tables on that page. Figure one, annual growth of the staple yield index across the 13 focus countries against the promise required. The gray one, the first bar on the bar chart, the rate implied by Agra promise to double yield by 2020. When I tell you that promise was oversold. The growth promise that was sold was 5.1 by 2020. Now, the growth from the growth of 12 years before Agra from 1994 to 2006 was 1.3. Now you have been on a that's the growth we have been on it, at least in terms of agricultural initiatives as a continent. The growth rate was 1.3.
Yeah.
And then someone shows up with a pledge of a behind load of money and promising a growth of 5.1.
Yeah. But delivering one.
That's five times the growth that we experienced. And as you can imagine, everyone was going, wow.
And delivering actually 1.2%.
And then fast forward now to, well.
Per year over 20 years. Whereas the 1.3 was 0.01% higher than the 1.2.
From 2006 to 2024. Now, let's see the 5.1 growth. It didn't happen. That's where the 5.2 show pops up.
The manifestation.
And now you think,
lack of.
You'd think, no, you know what? We are just getting started. There's growth coming.
Yeah, 20 years later. Wonderful.
No, it didn't. And then most recent 6 years from 2018 to 2024, 0.3.
Serious?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
The growth was not growing.
No, there was no growthing.
Yeah, no.
My goodness.
The best and very Friday-ish example I can come up with is Rick Ross and Nicki Minaj. You know, in this one very nice verse in You Are the Boss, where was it? It was in Beautiful Onyinyi.
Rick Ross and Nicki Minaj, Ramon.
That was You're the Boss. But the verse I'm going to reference is in Beautiful Onyinyi with Pisque. Yeah.
Are very serious here.
I can look into her eyes my whole life. We can make love for the whole night. The whole night, really? If by whole night you mean 2 minutes, then sure. But look, the promise that was made here was we can make love for the whole life.
Don't expose our romantic fortitude or our lack of said romantic fortitude as our gender.
Don't worry. There's a Canadian company that is busy defending us
Day. Huh? Which company? Viagra? Who?
I didn't even know that was Canadian.
Who? I didn't know the Viagra was Canadian.
Isn't that, that must be American. That must be American. No, this, look, all the adult entertainment industry does is, give us a, like, a good look, like, 24 minutes? That doesn't happen in real life.
Huh?
A 24 minutes long video?
I don't
have that doesn't happen in real life.
No, Helmut, no.
That didn't happen at all.
No. Okay.
2 minutes,
okay.
Max.
Okay, let's advance. Let's advance this conversation.
Agriculture.
Let's advance.
Look, the promise that
so
was...
you are like Bernie Mac, yeah? It's the World Heavyweight Championship bout. A lot can happen in 2 minutes.
Man, I can't believe that guy is dead.
Yeah, he was old-ish.
Yeah. Penny Mark.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, so the promise, look, the promise that was made here, the growth we were on was 1.3.
Mm.
And then someone showed up with a lot of money and promised us a growth of 5.1.
Mm.
And we're like, actually, well, what do we stand to lose? And they were like, actually, you stand to lose something here. But I'm not paying for everything. You also have to provide some kind of subsidy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we just decided to go along with it. And now, something happened between 2020, you know, something happened between 2020, between 2018 and 2024.
Mm.
I think this is where we should have realized, yeah, this is not working.
Isn't it COVID, Helmut?
Hmm?
Isn't it COVID?
2018 to 2024.
Oh, no. What about COVID is in there somewhere.
Yeah. COVID is in there somewhere.
Well, it's not like other African countries actually counted COVID as well, because
2006 to 2024, there was a 0.1% decline, not growth, decline.
Mm.
So we were not even growing, we were declining.
Mm.
This was, oh boy. I think, I have one awesome story that I wrote that draws a very, that encapsulates, I just walked past the private school.
Well, look at Helmut. At least you're not using David with project school descriptions here,
Oh, no.
Or community school representation, like, it's only David that loves using that reference. But yeah, but it's a scenario definitely, Helmut, of what has happened, what is problematic, because they probably knew in advance about Africa's integration strategy. I mean, why would you come to Africa? I'm also partially trying to define the bad faith representation that took place.
Yeah.
Look, we know, African politicians have a penchant, meaning a tendency. They've got a tendency for, being involved, hands-on. And how the hands-on manifests is, they sometimes request for, impossible things like iPhones with that can take 2 SIM cards. And, meeting up on a Saturday to discuss matters of national importance in a restaurant, scenarios like that. But when you look at a sector that's supposed to play a key foundation in any country on the African continent's advancement, its own personal developmental goals.
Yeah.
And you're dressing up your initiative, your altruism is dressed up in a scenario of let's bring inputs to you. And you ask the question,
I hope any minister from now on would ask this question. Where do these inputs come from? Who bought these inputs? Who financed these inputs? Because I would be very startled if a minister does not, a minister or ministry or ministry staff don't ask that question of international, of international organizations that are approaching African governments with the aim of potentially lobbying for something that is conducive to them, the international lobbyists.
Like, no one spends that amount of money without expecting something in return.
Exactly.
Like, it doesn't make sense.
But I'm now realizing, while I'm busy explaining this scenario, that is probably what happened a little bit earlier in this year, Helmut, when the Ministry of Finance had to issue that statement saying there were some sort of lobbyists that showed up to say, hey, listen, we would like to lend the government money as long as the government builds these projects.
As long as the government builds this,
with this money, but
specific projects.
But for these specific projects, what's that word? We'd prefer it if you use these specific functionaries to deliver on the projects. Now, why would you do something like that? At first, I would 2 months back, I thought, you know what? But the government already does this. They already allow for this kind of action to take place, which they already said yes to.
Yeah.
And now in hindsight, while we're doing this particular report, I realize it could have been an instance like this. And it's just
probably... Yeah, it was definitely because you're like, okay, you know what, we're making this money. Look, donor funding, it's at least from my experience, always come with those type of conditions.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are specific initiative that you are going, that you will be asked to spend it in.
Yeah.
Which is why, that's the part where I like to say that, I actually don't blame them. It's their money.
Yeah.
Yeah, they will attach all the conditions they will attach it to. If you don't want those conditions, just say no to the money.
Yeah.
You can't say yes to the money and expect to deviate from those conditions.
And it now in hindsight looks similar to what has happened here in Africa. Because now it starts looking more and more like there are actually bad faith actors popping up. Off on the doorsteps of African governments and telling them, hey, listen, we've got a bag of money. Look here. Here's the money. And how about you build something for us? And this is our contractor we want you to appoint. So technically this would have meant, and this is what the Ministry of Finance also cited. It would have meant if they said yes, the complete deviation from the procurement legislation in Namibia.
Yeah.
Because this would be fast tracking and bypassing legislation.
That will take you back to, you know what, we're going to have to amend this or do that.
And the legal challenge would have popped up saying, why would you allow this scenario and not this scenario?
Yeah.
I would have loved it if the Ministry of Finance back then mentioned who these particular people were that approached them to build specific things. But this is the scenario we see, Helmut. And this is the unfortunate reality that is popping up. And that's the reason why we also, the poster that we've had today, why we position the poster in the scenario. Look at it from a context of who gets to benefit from, I don't want to say civil society, but actually, you know, donor funding through civil society or through NGO organizations or through what is dressed up as in good faith, but in actual fact represents some sort of a negative action manifesting in your country.
That's a very, you know, that's a very slick way of being selfish without making it appear that you're selfish. Yeah.
But then you see in the long run, after 5 years, but this person...
It begins to pop up then, yeah. This person is not, they were not being nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They were just looking for a way to influence something. Because ask yourself the question, Helmut. Why would they show up with maize? Why is maize... Why would they use a crop like maize?
Okay.
Because with maize, maize has to go to a factory.
Do I?
Unless you're producing yellow maize. The one that we can eat like this, the sweet corn.
Do I?
Yeah.
1970s.
Yeah.
NESA shows up with a whole different initiative of, you know, I can save you a lot of time and I'll provide you a lot of nutrition
yeah.
for your kids. You know, if you add, you know, if you just, you know, just, well, put a pause on breastfeeding and then give your kids this solution. Milk. Yeah. Yeah. And, what are our health institutions telling us today?
Mm.
Breastfeed your kids.
Mm.
Yeah, because, you know, look, supplementary breastfeeding, baby milk formula, for example.
Mm.
There's nothing wrong with that. But when you turn it into a whole lifestyle of baby feeding program,
mm.
it's a terrible idea.
Mm.
Because from chemical, you know, the chemical makeup and the nutritional value of breast milk is way more advanced and it's tailored, you know, and every breastfeeding cycle is tailored, the chemical makeup is, you know, is based on the baby, you know, on the baby's, you know, previous suckling.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's different all the time. Because the mother's body is analyzing the baby's saliva
mm.
to determine what nutrients or what pathogens the baby is suffering from. And then the next milk is based, you know, is tailored for that particular need.
Mm.
There is not a single milk that you'll buy in the shop that has that capability. Which is why, I mean, it makes sense when health professionals are telling you that breastfeed your kids. But if you go back to the 1970s and you look at how baby milk formula was sold, it's like it was the silver bullet to, well, child malnutrition.
Yeah.
Except it's not. So, this is the very same thing that we are seeing today where you have, but we all know that, we all know at this point that, the whole 1970, it was just another Diamonds Are Forever campaign. They were just opening up a market.
Yeah, bo.
And this, from the look of things, look like it's just another, there's an available market. Don't just show up and start, you know, selling products. Just cultivate this market using millions of your dollars because you're going to make billions more once the diversity of the seeds is not in the picture anymore. And the only seeds that is available is the one that you have patents for.
Mm. Yep.
Capitalism 101.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Straightforward.
You know, be like a nice guy, but you know that your long-term goal is just diabolical.
And we're seeing it once again.
Yep.
We're literally seeing it once again. So, this is the particular thing also to look at. I mean, monoculturalism is a scary thing because you can immediately see with, for example, with monoculturalism or bringing in a crop that you want, that should be dominating.
Yeah.
And then you bring in things like the fertilizer.
That goes along with that particular crop.
With that particular crop. It also leads to a kind of a dependency situation. Definitely. It's as if they were trying to cultivate a market.
I would argue that's exactly what they were doing.
It's as if they were cultivating a market, because why would you show up with the seed,
yeah.
the GMO, and the fertilizer?
Yeah.
And you tell the agricultural policies of these 13 African countries, use this.
Yeah.
Don't let your farmers sell seeds to each other. No, no, no.
Yeah, because this one have been tested to it has nothing to do with science.
Who tested it? And then no one asks who tested it.
Look, the thing is you can show up with 10 questions, but just a stack of money and then the questions disappear. And,
stack of money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, look, I'm really, you know, look, I'm way past the idea of, more like the point of view of assuming that, politicians are, you know, more like politicians or lawmakers don't know what they're doing. You know, if they do something stupid, it's because they wanted to do something stupid because for one, they're fully grown men and women. they know what they're doing. So if you find out that a lawmaker did something dumb, it's either they're just an idiot and they did something dumb, or the second one, which I always put my money on, is, well, someone paid them to do exactly that. Which, before you start saying, no, you know what, if I was a lawmaker, I would never do that. Oh, no, come on, seriously. Chances are very high if we were lawmakers and someone dangled a stack of money in front of us, chances are very high we would just start going, actually, these initiatives are not that bad. You know, well, we could use some of these agricultural initiatives in our country. And then you're the one that will be running from one constituency to another and one region to another, pushing that idea of this is the number one seed that you must all adopt to end everything, you know, all the hunger problems or all the food insecurity, or this is the type of food or type of seed or type of fertilizer that will help us solve our food insecurity problems. Now, the question is, who told you that that is the only seed that can solve all your food insecurity problems? You sure you're not just selling as a product at this point? Because more often that's the case. And look, I think the decline in yield, not just the decline from the numbers that were promised, because the numbers that were promised were never even, you know, we didn't even try, because they were just too unrealistic. And but one thing that you see is that not only was there a decline, there was a really steep decline, which makes a lot of sense, because in the beginning, the idea was to help. The whole idea behind AGRA was an agricultural initiative, and with time they started shifting from agricultural initiative to basically salesmen for their country's fertilizer and seed companies, and then that's when they started shifting from agriculture into policy influence. And they basically abandoned the primary project. They showed up, or more like they proposed back in 2006 when they first showed up. So when you look at how everything shifted from agricultural initiative to, you know, sales rep for seed and fertilizer making companies straight into influencing policy, then you'll stop wondering why there was a steep decline in the agricultural initiative compared to what they proposed in the beginning. Because they basically abandoned the agriculture and started influencing policy. They were not into agriculture anymore. They were into policy influence. And so the agriculture declined because, well, the focus was not in agriculture anymore. It was in influencing policy all throughout the continent.
Mm.
And again, it's their money. They can put whatever condition they have on it. If you want your initiatives initiatives that speaks to your specific needs, depending on how you know your environment, then come up with your own initiatives and fund them. I have a fascinating story I came across that takes us back to 2014. Coming out of two of my favorite countries, Kenya and South Africa.
Hmm.
Actually, number one, my favorite countries, Namibia, then Kenya, and then South Africa. You see, in 2014, one gentleman called David Diaz, who was a senior employee at Kishugu. This company, the only company that was able to find on the African continent with this name, is Kishugu Holding, and it's based in South Africa.
Mm.
Yeah. Kishugu with extensive, David Diaz, a senior employee of Kishugu with extensive knowledge of forestry and conservation management, wrote an unsolicited paper addressing the importance of proper fire management on the African continent. One thing that he realized was that he saw a lot of foundations, again, pouring a lot of money on the African continent, to help Africans, combat wildfires. And then one thing that he
wrote an unsolicited or
he unsolicited document that he wrote was to basically explain to mostly the World Bank, because the document was the main recipient of the document was the World Bank, because they are the one of the biggest donors of the initiatives that were based on the African continent of combating wildfires. The thing is, I think after working with them for an extended period of time, he realized that, they were trying to fight all the fires. Then he wrote them a piece of that document that, the report was first made public here at an event here in Namibia, here in Windhoek. That was in 2016, before it was sent to the World Bank. The explanation he was explaining to them was that fire, as an environmental management tool, controlled fire as an environmental management tool, has been used on the African continent since forever. If you want to combat forest fire, you first have to understand this approach. So what you are combating, what you have to do is educate people on how to start controllable fire so that it doesn't get out of hand.
And Edric.
Need some help with the groceries this month? Then YouSave has a competition that is just for you. Every Friday between 1 and 2 p.m., Eagle FM will be giving away a $500 YouSave voucher. To stand a chance of winning the $500 YouSave voucher, all you have to do is follow Eagle FM Namibia on Facebook, X, and Instagram, and be on the lookout for the weekly competition question. YouSave, where good food costs less.
Lipura nenge no wapungwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe udite opoye ekukulile. Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshuana. Onongeshefa ya pungwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna e mitota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu honda doi inawa. Nene uto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa komarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nokumuna oijamwiri nawa. Ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM. Onmora itatimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile ko berewa mura hetatu natu bali o hetatu batatu o mafilane Eagle FM. The eye.
Welcome back. So let's continue. Now, where was I? The explanation that one Mr. Diaz was was explaining was that before you show up to a foreign land to try to solve problems that you think they have, first understand the culture, and then you'll figure out the best way to help. Because if you just pop up and start, doing all kinds of things, you'll realize that you are doing something that contradicts the general practice. But on the whole, on the whole foundations and philanthropy, guys, let's just note, we don't live in the ideal world. We live in the real world. And I like to remind myself that of that over and over again. The reason why I like to do that is because sometimes we act like once you come up with a plan, it's just, it's going to work flawlessly. Something can sound excellent in your head until you put it in practice. Then you realize that you still have to, some changes to make. This whole philanthropy idea. Look, there are people that are practicing philanthropy out there that are just doing it out of the kindness of their heart. But more often, it's based on a very smart way of making money.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's either a very smart way of making money or a very smart way of avoiding paying tax. And more often, it's completely both.
Which is number two, actually. Yeah. Did you know that philanthropy is a tax write-off in developed economies?
Yeah, it is a tax write-off. So in other words...
They get it back.
Yeah.
They will anyway get it back.
Look, this is where the irony then starts to pop up for me, because you're saying you are donating all the... Oh, actually, it makes sense, because if I have shares, and this is just my own example from my own, like trying to wrap my mind around this whole thing. If I own shares in a fertilizer company, instead of me paying tax, then I can just buy fertilizer from that company and then donate that fertilizer to civil society organizations that are, you know, more like NGOs that are into agricultural initiatives.
Which are already established.
Which are already established and then...
which are already influencing certain things already on the ground, yeah. Like decisions.
Helmut Pongo Philanthropy donated 10,000... Well, 2.5 tons of fertilizer. Where did he buy the fertilizer?
And then they find out...
Just as a... Where did he buy the fertilizer?
And then they find out Helmut was meeting a bunch of Americans on someone's island, and they were discussing how to, you know, find ways of entering...
Yeah.
An initiative that Namibians didn't ask for. But Helmut showed up with the money, the seeds, and the fertilizer.
Man, the Ukraine example that you just reminded, because I almost forgot that one. But that's just an excellent example of how this whole idea around, you know, donations comes in. You know, we are donating the, you know, $10 billion to Ukraine. No, you're not. You are giving guns. Ukraine.
Do you know what's the funny thing?
Who is making the guns? An American company. So none of that money is actually leaving the country.
Do you know what was the funny thing?
Yeah.
I kept asking every time when Joe Biden was still the president, he would announce these new grants.
Packages.
New packages.
Yeah.
And then I would ask, I said, now where's this money coming from? Because we constantly hear that the Americans have issues about their debt.
Yeah.
And where is this money going? Is it literally like a bank transfer happening? And then you realize, oh no, it's not. More bullets, it's clothes, it's guns, it's some other equipment, but they're all procured from American companies.
Yeah.
Or it has to be an American company positioned in Europe that can basically fast track it. So it's basically telling your local procurement, okay, I will give you money if you send products there.
Yeah.
We don't know under what condition these products move. Just send the products.
So you take the money from, you're basically taking taxpayers' money,
yeah.
And then you give it to a private company that will then take those, that will take the product that you are buying and then give it to another product, private company that will ship or fly the hardware. So that's just privatizing taxpayers' money.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is, Helmut.
Wow.
On an epic scale. Yes, it is.
That's a genius way of laundering your own taxpayers' money. And then you find out that a bunch of guys that are advocating for these packages also have share or stock in these private companies that is where the weapons are being procured from.
Yeah, boy, yes.
Holy cow.
Reality is ugly, ne?
Oh, it is.
Reality is super ugly.
Oh, it is.
I mean...
You are not donating anything, are you?
No. In reality, no.
You are not.
unless it comes in the format of like this, like what we've been discussing now the whole time. If it shows up in this form, in this format.
So if you show up with money in Namibia, and then you buy from, you know, you buy the products that you are say, that you are claiming to be donating from a local manufacturer.
Yeah.
Like take for example what the what the Americans would be doing would be to take that money and then go to Ukraine and then buy Ukrainian made hardware.
But they're not gonna do that.
They're not gonna do that.
Because why would you give the Ukrainian companies the hardware, either money?
I mean, you know, that's what you're saying on the front page of every newspaper and the headline of pretty much every, wherever you're reporting that. You're saying you're donating money to us.
Yeah.
Just take that and then give it to a Ukrainian manufacturer so they can produce that hardware.
But they won't.
And then
do
give
that.
It to their military.
But they won't do that.
Because that money doesn't come back.
Yes. So you don't want to enrich the Ukrainians through direct money.
So you're just enriching me on paper.
Yes.
Jeez, this world is ugly.
It's helping you in spirit. It's achieving
that's not
solidarity and support.
That's not you helping me. That's you using my country to make money for you.
Yes. It's ugly, Helmut.
Yeah, it is.
It's also probably one of the reasons why this subject attracted my attention when I recorded it, when I signed up for it and recorded it. Because it caught my my interest so quickly because sometimes I would read like these obscure things. If it's a webinar, I always read the description. What is it? What is it for? If it's like read someone's article, who cares? But if it says you're invited to a webinar and I go and read, what's the description?
What's it about?
And I'm like, what? Okay, let's sign up. Let's listen. Let's see what they do. And then I record it. And it's indications like this, right? Where there's so much knowledge being created out there that we've got to understand what's going on this African continent. It's Namibians as well. And also, for us to also look at the new realm that Namibia is about to enter. For example, just imagine, guys, if that first oil starts flowing, the level of interest that Namibia will be flooded with. And we're talking about all manner of people wanting to come here to us, just us Namibians. What level of interest, and what do you think is the level of interest going to be, Helmut? Already Namibia is. Us Namibians.
Yeah.
And that's why I still agree that that report that was done by that one researcher, that associate researcher with the IPPR about the cost of living pressure in Namibia, where she put it in such lovely scenarios in that report. Why I still agree with that report until today. Namibia is suffering. The average Namibian is suffering from a cost of living crisis. It has manifested in Namibia.
Yeah.
The authorities are not researching it, not measuring it. The NSA is not empowered to give more data and analysis past a certain point. I mean, giving me CPI doesn't help me if I don't know about if I don't know how many people are being employed into new jobs, are joining jobs, and how many people are losing their jobs on a monthly basis. The NCPI becomes a useless indicator.
Yeah.
Because for us to understand growth, you've got to understand, okay, so how many Namibians are now earning a living, are getting jobs, are becoming self-sufficient with the money that they make versus the opposite, how many of them are losing? Because the real thing is about measuring us. It's not about measuring a loaf of bread's cost. How many Namibians are there that can afford the current prices of a loaf of bread?
Yeah.
Or of, what was it? 1 kilogram, 2.5 kilograms worth of maize meal. Or a kilogram of sugar. Or 500 grams of salt. Or a 750 bottle of cooking oil. Or a dozen of eggs. The basic stuffs that the basic things that you would find in many Namibians food baskets. What are these things cost? And how many of those Namibians are there?
Zero. Zero such analysis is taking place. So I loved it, Helmut, because it's analysis like that that you can compare with the impacts from, for example, what oil and gas would do and would allow and would the problems it would create in Namibia. So why did I reference, just before we conclude, why did I reference cost of living? Because it's already a problem for the everyday Namibian to afford housing, to afford transport, to afford all those particular... And getting the first barrel of oil pumped and shipped and refined does not mean our fuel will get cheaper.
No.
Please, Namibians,
international market price.
Don't ever, for the love of everything good and green on this planet, assume that it won't. Nigeria proved it. But yeah. Before we go?
I just learned how to, you know, put up an act of,
You put up an act?
Put up an act like you are being nice. You know, the whole time you are just, selling fertilizer.
You are flashing.
Homies. Yeah.
Yeah, you are busy flashing fertilizer to everybody.
Flashing fertilizer and killing the seed diversity so that you can create a market for your homies, for your homies' patented seed.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, if you want initiatives to speak to your own needs, come up with your own initiatives, but most importantly, come up with the money. Until Sunday, from me, you'll have a good weekend.
On my side, also until Sunday, guys, you'll have a good weekend. Yes, Helmut's words.